said.
Don't believe what I just saw!
I'm a man! I'm 40!
This is John Sheezer. I'm
Eric Marino.
Eric.
No, I gotta tell you about the Clippers. I'm an
addict. Sportsaholics, I gotta.
Let's just hope this shit doesn't go viral. Okay.
And it is that time of the week again, Sportsaholics episode number 98. The Jason Collins episode number 98. I'm not doing a defensive lineman. Jason Collins, as we all know, was the second gay professional NBA player behind. John Amici, I think, came out after his retirement. Jason Collins, the 18th overall pick in the 2001 NBA draft. By your beloved Houston Rockets, played sparingly
And he was one of those twins. There are lots of basketball twins. There are a good deal of basketball twins, more than I would say almost any other sport.
I'm going to start with the O'Bannon brothers.
Right.
Ed and Charlie O'Bannon, UCLA alumni.
Right, and then there was the Stanfords had like two sets of...
The Collinses and the Lopez.
The Lopez.
Brooke and Robin. And then I think that's where the list stops for me.
No, and then there's somebody came out of Arizona, right? Or they're in Arizona now. Like, there's one that just got...
Marcus and Markieff Morris from KU. How could I forget the Morris twins? Who up until just recently had managed to maintain... They stayed on the same team their entire lives. Even in the NBA, it worked out that they got to play on the same team together, which good for them. It didn't really work out here in Phoenix, but you know. So that's it. Number 98, the Jason Collins episode. It's been a crazy week in sports. We got a fantastic episode this week. We
have fantastic
former McDonald's All-American, University of Florida point guard Teddy DuPay comes on this week just to talk about what he's been up to. If you're not familiar with Teddy DuPay's story, if you bring his name up in basketball circles, people know. He scored a lot of points in Florida. I believe still has the record. Dropped 70 points in a game one time. But his senior year at the University of Florida kicked off the team gambling. Never a good thing. You never want to go down that route. But that's, if you want to read up on that whole situation, there's tons of articles online regarding that. So we didn't really get into the gambling, but just talked about what he was doing, playing in South, you know, what it's like playing professionally, not necessarily overseas in Europe, but South America. You hear about the
underseas.
Yeah, under the equator.
Undercontinent.
Hear about basketball under the equator. So we get, and just kind of what he's been up to now. So.
Under equator, down South America.
It was a great time. And, so, yes, we'll have Mr. Teddy DuPay, Mr. Florida Basketball, 1997, I believe. And, like I said, McDonald's All-American, I think, in the 98 game.
I think that's our first McDonald's All-American on the show, and that's something.
And not our last, you McDonald's All-Americans out there listening. And we're not talking about you guys at home that eat 3 quarter-pounders a day. You technically are a McDonald's All-American.
You're an All-American.
If you eat McDonald's
three times
a week,
you're not an All-American athlete.
You're a McDonald's All-American. The Broncos won.
I don't believe it.
Peyton has that second ring.
Yeah, but it was just like that Jerome Bettis ring where it's like, hey, man, you know what? Seriously, by the way, I'll tell you when it was a halftime of the game and I was like, you know, the only way I could actually respect Peyton Manning is if he retired at halftime. It's really, he had the lead. He should have just retired and let Brock Osweiler finish it out because there's no defense anymore. No one can tell me that Brock Osweiler couldn't have done exactly what Peyton Manning did, if not better, in that Super Bowl. You can't. I mean, look, he got stripped.
No touchdown passes.
They weren't even. By the way, by the midway per the third quarter, they really stopped having an offense that was meant to that was gonna that in any way could have come back or won the game. They were. It was like it was watching a really boring poker game.
And this is okay. And to absolutely and to that point, this is the first time I had ever seen a fourth quarter. Yeah, you're up by seven. The game's not out of reach.
Wasn't out of reach.
Broncos get the ball back with 4 minutes, and they just go run, punt. There was not even an attempt to get a first down because they're thinking, like, let's not even risk an interception or anything like that.
Right.
Let's just give the ball right back to their offense, and our defense is going to shut them down. So, Manning did not do anything.
He did literally less than nothing.
He did less than Trent Dilfer did with the Ravens.
But, I mean, you know, it's like, but hey, that's why I was very satisfied. I have to say, like, I'm not a Von Miller fan. I'm not. But I was really glad that he won the Super Bowl MVP because to me, when a defensive player wins Super Bowl MVP, look, man, it's really hard for those voters to give it up to a defensive player. And it just went to show you that
happened 13 times, I believe.
So, right, right, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's like out of 50, you're saying like, you know, roughly just a little bit over 1 in 5 is defensive. And, you know, they love to give it to offensive players. But there was no running. It was like, by the way, when you look at Peyton Manning's stats, which are something like 10 for 23 and 145 yards or something with a fumble and an interception, when you see his numbers and their rusher had like 95 yards on 20 carries, they don't look like winning numbers. They just don't look like, when you see those numbers, you don't think they won. But, I mean, that defense, it was the best defense all year. It was the reason that they were undefeated. That was the reason they were getting away. Peyton was getting away with it all the first half of the season.
I didn't realize they were that good. I mean, I guess.
Oh, I did.
We were all, I mean, I was just mystified by the whole Peyton Manning thing that you're not really paying attention to or maybe respecting the defense as much as you should have been. But
he can't play a full season. He just happens to be. It's like you know what? It's very much like Peyton Manning and Kobe right now are to me are the exact same athlete. In other words, like they were great, they were on championship teams, and they were a big
can
part
go for
of the,
33 or toss 3 touchdowns every once in a while. Still got a little bit of that,
but clearly can't play an entire season. Limping, bad feet, bad wheels. Can't play an entire schedule anymore. If Kobe was on a stacked team, Kobe would play, like, you know, it's like Kobe's not, you know, Kobe wouldn't be, well, he still may be retiring, but, you know, if he was on a championship sort of team with a great defense and other scoring components, you know, he probably wouldn't have retired like he's doing now. Like, he decided to basically quit because he knew the team he's on is terrible.
Well, and he can, I mean, I was going to say he can go out and just put up shots and no one cares. I'm like, no, that's what he did his entire career anyway. So it's not like a different Kobe you're seeing. It's just spotlighted even more so now, even though it's depleted because the talent around him is just so
I just
awful.
Thought it was amazing. Cam Newton, just they never got a second touchdown. That's what was amazing. They never led. He never dabbed. He never dabbed.
And see, he missed the opportunity. I'm sure he had a new dance move. And maybe that's why he was so upset in the press game afterwards. Is he had a whole
By the way, I thought the running back for the Carolina Panthers was stupid to be dancing when they were still behind. It was a terrible dance move. And it's like, hey, dude. And John Stewart, their offense, I mean, that running game, they kept going up the middle for a yard. And it kept happening. And that was when I realized, like, oh, I don't really watch Carolina's offense enough. And
you
I was like,
you just see the highlights. You see the
right. I watched a couple games. I had no idea they were this bad.
Like, they're actually not even impressive.
And what's his name? Tolbert or Tall? The guy that rumbled for 10 yards and then he just dropped the ball. I mean, they couldn't hold on to the ball. It was, you know, compliments to the Von Miller and those Bronco defenses. I mean, I did not want to see.
How strong is Von Miller? I've never seen someone just come around the corner and just rip a ball like that out of a quarterback's hands. Like, thank you. That's like some high school. You see that in high school.
Yeah.
You don't see that. And not just any quarterback, but Cam Newton.
I don't know how you felt, but there was a certain point where I really sort of felt like the Carolina Panthers were playing touch and the Broncos were playing tackle. There was that long punt return where it was like the Panthers actually had bumped into the receiver, and you could tell in some ways, like, they were interfering with the opportunity, but the Bronco actually caught it. anyway and then started to run, but they all had let up on the play. Or Cam Newton fumbles the ball, and it looks like he's about to go for it, but then it's like he's about to dive for the ball on the ground, but then he suddenly thinks better of it or
that
has
was,
a second thought.
That was ridiculous. And that, you know, that single-handed, like, Cameron said I was on the fence. I just didn't really care either way about Cam Newton.
Right.
But I didn't realize that Cam Newton, the level of Cam Newton could reach where it's gotten as far as being in on the news, or when I say on the news, on SportsCenter, on FS1, top of the full sports page, just every day for no reason at all. But that play really didn't sit well with me. And his, you know, he's like, oh, it was a weird angle with my knee. I'm like, yeah. So?
You didn't want it. It was like, I'll tell you, Kurt Warner in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, at the 1 yard line, he got hit so hard by the Patriots. He got hit so hard that I saw him not just give up the ball. He drops the ball in the end zone, and Tabucky Jones runs it actually 103 yards for a touchdown the other way, which gets nullified by a Willie McGinnis holding penalty. But Kurt Warner got hit so hard, he gives up the ball. He gives up the will to live, basically. You could see that you just don't want it as bad as the other team. The Broncos defense wanted it way more than anybody else on that field. I mean, those guys were tremendous. And I thought Cam Newton's athleticism, having just seen my Patriots and Tom Brady get chased by the exact same defense. I mean, it was the exact same thing, but I thought, you know, hey, Brady's not quick. He's not Cam Newton. And I thought Cam Newton's escapability would extend plays and he would make things happen. The other thing I wanted to tell you though, was I thought it was almost comical. The differences between Peyton Manning's passes and Cam Newton's passes. Now, we all know, we've all been making fun of Peyton Manning's dying quails, those fluttering ducks that he throws. But it was almost like Cam Newton was, the passes were almost, no, they were too athletic.
They were violent.
They were streaking shot. They were too, it was like, if Peyton Manning's have too much of an arc, these things didn't have enough arc. These things didn't have enough touch. It looked to me like, you remember those old, those small Nerf balls that have that, they have that aerodynamic tail? The Whistler, and you can just really huck that thing, and it'll spin.
Testaverde could throw it 110 yards.
That is what, it looked like he was throwing that, and he's throwing to Ted Ginn Jr.
That's the problem right there. Ted? Right,
they didn't
Ginn
have receivers.
Junior. Right. This guy has left a bad taste in my mouth since his Ohio State days. He's bounced around the league, returned a few punts. That's great, but that's all he is. He's a punt returner, but unfortunately, these teams put him out as a wide receiver. One play in particular, I think it was the fourth quarter, and they're trailing. He catches a ball over the middle. The play goes for, it was like a big game, 40 yards, something. It was one of their biggest plays, I think, or biggest play to date. Well, he crosses the field and then just runs out of bounds.
And
what's weird is this precedes the missed field goal. And, you know, it's sports. A lot can happen here and there and this and that. Look, dude, just go upfield. He could have easily gotten 4 more yards with contact, maybe even 5 or 6.
At that point, they were really afraid of just getting hit and losing the ball. You were just seeing bad things happen.
The field goal goes in. I mean, you're just like, it's weird. I saw, when you see it and you take note of it, I saw this once at a minor league baseball game, the Reno Aces, which is the AAA affiliate for the Diamondbacks, and they had a left fielder. His last name was Marte, and I looked him up. He was the only guy on the team that had a bonus. Like, he had already pocketed $1 million.
He's the bonus baby.
He was that guy on the team. Well, late in the game, they're up by a couple runs, and it's AAA, right? You're playing it for the Reno Aces. You're just waiting for your shot in the big leagues. Well, a pop fly comes up. He lets it drop. He could have caught the ball. Alex Gordon, 9 out of 10 times, is a left fielder's catching this thing. He lets it drop. Very next play, that would have been out 3 of the inning. Very next play, shot in between first and second. Second baseman dives for it. Something happens.
Right.
He's laying on the field for the next 10 minutes. They have to cart him off like a torn ACL. And I'm just sitting there screaming at him. I'm like, dude, he wouldn't be on the field right now if you wouldn't have laid up on that.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, that guy's career may be over because you let that ball drop in. Time and space change. And to your point, Shiza, let's talk about the most controversial thing that happened. was the non-catch when the Panthers first got the ball. When the Panthers first received the ball, they throw this to open the game. They throw a gigantic 20. I mean, they were up at the 40, 45 yard line. It was a stumbling. He didn't catch it. Oh my God, the ball never touched the ground. He caught it. They call it incomplete, and the Panthers challenge. And it's one of those things where I'm like, that's a catch. Like, and you watch the, and they told, and they go, you know, CBS goes to Mike Carey and
the specialist.
Yeah, they go to that. Right. They go to that former ref who had actually refed a Super Bowl, and he's like, oh, that's going to be a catch. And in fact, I was like, I was at a very cool Super Bowl party, and I was like, I'm going to have a little of this candy bacon and come back and then see this be a catch. And I was shocked, I tell you, to find that wasn't a catch. And you know, our good buddy Brian Moses is like, well, you know, they always call that because, you know, he's juggling it. I'm like, juggling has nothing to do with it. Because what happened was
that the ball hit the ground.
The ball never hits the ground.
Then it's a catch.
It's like that crazy curse catch from the Super Bowl against the Patriots last year. It's like the ball never hits the ground. He doesn't need to follow through or make the catch in that sense because he doesn't actually make the completion until he's on the ground, the ball's on his hip, and his hands on it. Everything has stopped moving. The ball has not touched the ground. Guess what, everybody? That's a catch. That's a catch. It should have been overturned because there was clear evidence. And by the way, when you watch the replay, there are at least three, if not four times, you're like, the ball's going to touch the ground. And then it doesn't. And the ball's going to, it doesn't touch the ground. So they should have overturned it. And what happens right after? It was 3rd and 8. And Von Miller comes and hits Cam Newton, fumble.
Rips.
And it's in the end zone, and it's 10 points. And now it's a whole different game. It's a completely different game. If that's a catch, all of a sudden, we're at the very least, even if they don't score, they could have gone down to score. It might have opened up their whole offense in a different way. But now you're down 10 points.
And this was weird about replay.
And by the way,
right?
At that moment, remember, the Carolina Panthers are only going to score 10 points the rest of the game. So at this point, you're talking about we're fucking 7 minutes into the Super Bowl, and the Broncos have just proved they were at this point, as it stands, they are guaranteed to go into overtime in the Super Bowl because all Carolina's going to do in the rest of the game is score 10 points. That was the game. That was a terrible non-call. They picked up the flag on some defensive holding. There were some very, very fishy, ugly, ugly moments. It was not a good game. It was a terrible, terrible football game.
Now, it's Super Bowl 100 when the officiating crews are actual digitized. At that point, when you take the heart and soul, the beating pulse out of the referee, is there still this argument? Or is it to the point where, well, you know what? They got all the laser beams. You know, they had all the sensors. And, yeah, that's a catch. You know what? I mean, I think that's really where refereeing has to go to before.
I wouldn't be surprised.
We don't see horrible calls like this.
I gotta tell you, well, before we get to Super Bowl 100, that's maybe true, but I would say almost by like Super Bowl 75 in 25 years, we might see the the Twitter or whatever is Twitter in 25 years. It'll be like the you make the call. Should we reverse this call? Like the chat, it'd be the Twitter challenge where it's like everyone in America.
Ooh, I like that.
Everyone gets the vote.
Like that's like a Vince McMahon XFL kind of a thing.
Right. Like the audience will get to lie. You get to in real time vote. Is that a fumble? Is that not a fumble?
Dude, you're on to something. Because then that way, if you have more of your fans watching the game,
right,
then it's going to affect the outcome of the game. Ooh, I like this a lot.
Did you get involved, the Twitter involved in the challenges? And the other thing, which I don't think got enough play, and I was it was sort of the scandal I was waiting for, or the drama I was waiting for, is so after the Panthers have lost that challenge, which was shocking, somewhere in the second quarter, they had to challenge again, which they won. But now they had to play the rest of the Super Bowl with no challenges because you get two challenges. If you win both challenges in an NFL game, you get a third challenge. They had used both. They had won one and lost one, so they don't get the bonus third challenge. So you had to play the rest of the game. Like if there had been anything controversial that wasn't a turnover or a touchdown, Carolina had no recourse. They could. I mean, the NFL is looking. I'm telling you, man, the challenge is it's going to get hairy in the Super Bowl real soon.
It was just like watching somebody bully someone. Like the Panthers, by the end of that game, were like in a corner, curled up in a ball with their ears between their knees, just trying not to get hit anymore. They punted the ball away, down two scores with 2 minutes left.
And I don't even know what that is. And people said, well, they're on their own six. It's like, yeah, it's the Super Bowl. And if you're, it's like, I don't have a chance.
It's the coaching equivalent of Cam Newton not diving for that football.
I have no idea. I have no idea what happened.
All right. So then what about the post game? All the Cam Newton stuff. I don't really care. It doesn't matter. It's just, and now they've gone back. Well, Peyton said this in a story, and Tom Brady said this in 2006 about losing. And it's
yeah,
just like,
by the way, it
doesn't matter. It's a 26-year-old that lost the Super Bowl. Guess what? He's not. He's going to always be immature. He's not going to play the game like the Mannings do and put on the suit and tie, and you know, go up there and say all the right things because Cam Newton doesn't care.
Your day didn't go the way you thought. And by the way, he got his dick knocked in the dirt. I mean, he got knocked down time and time again.
I mean, he's got to be embarrassed like that one.
And it's also his fault. The reason they lost the Super Bowl is on him. Now, granted, he had no running backs to help him. He had no receivers to help him. It was all on his shoulders, and he failed. I mean, an interception or two and two fumbles, one for a touchdown, the other one setting up a
I mean, wouldn't you be embarrassed, though? You're an adult. You're a professional quarterback. And now there's this highlight that will forever live on from Super Bowl 50 of you flailing on the ground like your mom just said you had to come inside for dinner and you can't play anymore. And, like, pouting.
Like
an 8-year-old kid because of some flags. You're just like,
he should have got that. There was
compose yourself,
that
man.
Was a roughness. That was a roughness call in the end zone. Oh, and the other thing is,
Jim
by the
Brown's
way,
looking at this guy like, you're a pussy, man.
How about Tlaib, who's admitted it now, that is grabbing people by the face mask and throwing them out of bounds by their head? I mean, that's an ejection.
That's an Amendola move or whatever. Who was it that did it to the Chiefs?
Oh, that was that
that's
was
where that came from.
That's clean. No, that was clean. By the way, Amendola,
on that punt?
What Amendola did
was he got penalized for
Yeah, but it was legal. What actually Amendola, right. While he was penalized, what Amendola actually did was legal. Amendola is allowed to do that.
I know, that's crazy.
He's allowed to do that, and he got flagged. What Tlaib does is he knew that, hey, man, I'm on the 3-yard line. I need to make sure this guy doesn't score, and I'll throw him out by his fucking face.
And that, well, I think it was part of that, and he also knew that where they're at, like, it's only going to move the ball up a yard, you know? I think
it's a yard and a half, right. It's a yard and a half. By the way, they already have a first down. It wasn't like you're giving them more
downs.
That's
what I'm saying. He got that from
right.
That was Amendola's
there was no. There's no penalty. And that's also where you start saying, like, this is where those things about, like, there are a couple things I want changed in the NFL. One, I want the automatic first down for defensive holding removed. In fact, I want it removed, automatic first down from interference. It should just be, you should get the down, it should be yardage and the down over. There's no, in the way the NFL is with the passing game now, there's no reason to get automatic first downs and let, look, it's 3rd and 17 and Peyton Manning gets a bullshit 5-yard defensive holding call, but gets a new set of downs and that saves a drive and that means he can score. These guys, and by the way, and the Patriots get them too. I mean, everybody gets them. It's bullshit and it needs to be stopped. They also need to get rid of the, we're going to assess that on the kickoff. Stop assessing any yardage on kickoffs because it doesn't fucking matter.
The ball goes out of the end zone anyway.
Right.
You know?
It's like you're given 5 yards and you're going to get a touchback. You know what? You put it on the ensuing drive.
Yeah, you're kicking
it off. What you really should do, what I'm saying is, no, we're not going to assess. We aren't going to assess it on the kickoff. We're going to assess it on the first play when they get the ball. So it should be you should be on the 15.
That's a real penalty.
That's a penalty. This, hey, I jumped off sides because it's like you're allowing people to jump off sides because there is no penalty. Tlaib face masking of that degree in a Super Bowl. He could have really hurt that man. That was one of the most violent plays I have ever seen in Super Bowl history. He should have been ejected. And I don't think I've ever watched a Super Bowl and said, that guy needs to be ejected. As soon as I saw it, I was like, he can get thrown out for that.
Well, and it's weird because you know the refs are sitting there like, we should kick him out. And then they're like, we can't though. It's only the first quarter of the Super Bowl.
If it were basketball. If it were basketball,
guys, pardon the police.
We're
chase.
Talking to you live from Sunset Boulevard, man.
A lot
the,
going on.
And the
out
police
here.
And the fire are trying to shut this show down. But we won't
day.
Stop. We don't stop broadcasting until the show is done. What I'm saying is, if this was basketball, you know the refs would have huddled around the monitor and they would have had to assess, you know, the flagrant one, flagrant two, ejection, ball, all that stuff. They would have had to do all of that, and that's what was also needed. Yeah, that was needed.
And again, just. I mean, it always comes back to me because you grow up, you're like, oh, yo, the kids are watching, the kids are watching. And I guess, yeah, the kids are watching, but parents, just be sure you tell your kids, like, this guy's a punk. Nobody likes this guy, so don't be this guy. You know
not,
what?
By the way, I'm not going to be like, the kids are watching, because it's football. People are hitting each other. This isn't, you know, we're not, the whole sport's not actually a good example. But if you're going to be playing it, play it right.
Yeah, I guess that's a good.
And they shouldn't even have those face masks. Those face masks are a danger. They're stupid, and they're.
There was an article about that I had read where remove the face masks and see how hard these people start hitting each other. Or the helmet completely.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're like, oh,
the helmet's the weapon. The helmet's the weapon. It's too heavy. It does damage. It's like it's guys, just like in a car. It's about the second impact. It's not like if you're in a gigantic Escalade, but you're not in a seatbelt, when you get in a car accident, your body then smashes into the inside of the car. Your brain is going to hit the inside wall of your skull. It doesn't matter how big a pad you put around your head, the brain inside is still colliding with the wall of your skull, just like Dale Earnhardt. But so what I'm saying is, in this sense, it's like you don't need to be an Escalade because Escalades are traveling faster. They're going to create more of an impact. You need to have a smart car. You need to do something that basically pops apart. You need Lego helmets. You need something that just explodes on impact and distributes.
Maybe like a lacrosse helmet or something.
I'm all about the lacrosse. I'm big on lacrosse or hockey helmets. That's what the modern lacrosse helmet is basically what they should wear.
Maybe like, and maybe even remove the face because you don't have the risk of the ball hitting you in the face like in lacrosse.
Well, there's a there was a great article years ago that it's because the very first face mask is a bar. I think I want to say it's for Otto Graham. And the one thing that they said, they're wearing no longer. They've moved beyond leather helmets, but we're now wearing the proto helmet or the proto. NFL helmet.
Plastics invented.
Right, but we don't have, but it has no face mask at all. But what happens, I want to say Otto Graham had a broken nose. And so the coach, I want to say it was Paul Brown. They put this bar across and it was like, but the interesting part of the article was saying when it was just you literally face to face with the man across from you, there was no eye gouging. It's like, because your face is vulnerable and their face is vulnerable. But now when there's a face mask, it does enough to dehumanize that all of a sudden you start poking in there. You start getting your fingers in there. You're poking the eyes, that kind of stuff.
If you're Talib.
You're absolutely. Aqib Talib. And I loved him when he was a Patriot. Then he betrayed me. In fact, Welker hit him and hit him so hard that he transferred over to the other team. I didn't want to see him happy, but, you can't. You can't stop every evil from winning. Sometimes bad things happen. But on the other hand, HGH, Peyton Manning, HGH is going to eat you up. And I really hope that they investigate.
Don't think it's going to matter. No one's going to care.
He did it.
Because he played.
He did it. He's a cheater. He's a bigger cheater than Tom Brady. And having HGH, imagine a world in which deflated footballs were delivered to Giselle. Okay, and then try to tell me that Tom Brady's innocent. What I'm saying is HGH went to his home. He had 4 neck surgeries. Don't tell me that his wife we can't tell you what my wife has. You need to tell us what serious disease your wife has that she needs HGH. Or, hey, she's got menopause, or she's trying to fight this kind of thing or that kind of thing. You had 4 neck surgeries, and you made $80 million in the last 4 years because you took HGH.
But you were a nice guy, Peyton, and you answered all the questions at the press conference. You kissed Papa John after the Super Bowl.
That was ugly.
So no one's going to care.
Yeah, I really hated that Papa John. I mean, I don't like Papa John anyway, and I hate those ads. The fact that Papa John came over and then kissed him on the cheek, I was like, ugh! And the only thing I haven't liked that that almost that was I hated when the Red Sox finally won in 2004. Drew Barrymore and Jimmy Fallon like were on the field kissing because it was like the end of that movie Fever Pitch. But we, you know, you also didn't, you wouldn't know that for another several months. And I'm like, you guys are like, it took 86 years for the Red Sox to finally win the World Series, and you guys are kind of ruining it. And then Schilling did it the after, and then Schilling the next day is like, oh, you should go out and vote for George W. Bush. I'm like, you are ruining the World Series for me, Schilling.
See, and Peyton, that's why we love you, because what did you say? You go, you know what? I'm going to sit back and let the emotions die down before I make any decisions. But first and foremost, I'm going to drink me some Budweisers. And God bless. I wonder.
Oh, how, what was with the Budweiser?
I'm guessing if he got a half a mil every time he said Budweiser in an interview or something. Four different times I heard him mention Budweiser.
He definitely said it twice.
And it was Budweiser. It was not Bud or Bud Light
right.
Or a Bud Heavy. He might have just said, I'm going to go down to Augustus Budweiser.
By the way, I also would say that's how bad his neck injury is. He was like, I'm not going to Disneyland. I am getting drunk. I am going to drink beer. I need to numb myself. I can't possibly go on Space Mountain. I need to ride the Budweiser train.
All the way to retirement.
Which isn't the Silver Bullet. Totally different train.
Nope.
That's Coors Light.
And I'm still waiting to see my Silver Bullet commercial come out. It should be. This here, got listeners at home, here's the deal. When you shoot the commercial, you get paid for making it, but then you don't get any extra money until it actually makes it onto television.
Yeah.
So if you see myself and a wife destroying a house with a sledgehammer, that's me. And then let me know, because then I know I've got money coming that I would love to have right now. So, yeah, not to be confused with the Silver Bullet. That's a very...
All right, that's our Super Bowl. That's our Super Bowl, and
just air the commercial already. It's been 7 weeks since we shot it.
I think we've recapped the Super Bowl enough.
Yeah, God, why did I even get that into my head? Anyway, guys, this is where the show gets great, because I grew up playing basketball, loving basketball, reading basketball, watching basketball, McDonald's All-American game every year since I was a little kid.
Yeah,
and to finally see a great White Hope and Teddy Dupay was, I mean, to hear these stories on ESPN and Dickie V talking about this guy who's dropping 60, 70.
Da, 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 I'm loving it.
Yeah, just a great high school career and a great collegiate career as well, but unfortunately cut short due to gambling scandal, but has since moved on and is doing big things down in Florida. And if you're listening and you're in the Florida, in the South, in Texas, hit up Teddy Dupay, because his basketball camps are all over down there. And you want your son, you want your daughter to play in the NBA, WNBA, or overseas, maybe in South America professionally. I think he's the guy you take your kid
Teddy
to.
Dupay, Teddy Dupay.
Guys, remember,
onelovely.com.
Go to onelovely.com, onelovely.com. Pick up a shirt. They support us, so support them. And when we get back from break, we will be talking with the legendary Teddy Dupay.
Stay obsessed.
All right, we are back, and we are with... Well, we'll just get into it. Teddy Dupay. Coach Dupay now, I guess you're referred to as. Basketball legend, not only in Florida, nationally. And that's what I like about you, Teddy. Do you mind if I call you Teddy, or do you like prefer Coach? Or how would you?
No, Teddy's fine. Teddy's fine.
Okay, all right. When your name's mentioned amongst in basketball circles, you get a rise out of people because of just some of the things you've done on the court, and you know some of the things unfortunately you're known for off the court as well. But I wanted to have you on today just to talk about just that entire ride and just where you're at now, which is giving back to the game that gave so much to you, which you know, it's great to see. And that's with if you guys, listeners in Florida and in the South, that's the Teddy Dupay basketball camp. You can go to teddydupay.com. And that's based in and around the Tampa area. Is that right?
We're all over the state. And even last year, we went out to Dallas and did a camp. But yeah, we're primarily located in Tampa. That's where our regular training schedule is at. But like I said, we've got a great team of people that, you know, get us out there and you know, they help us track down kids that they really want and need the help. And so we're willing to go anywhere that the kids need us.
And so I wanted to talk, because you currently still hold the Florida high school scoring record for points in a career. Once scored 70 points in a single game. What does that feel like to be in that kind of zone where you're able to score 70 points in a single game?
Well, I'll tell you, that night it was a state playoff game. We were playing a very, very, very good team. And I was just happy to get to play all four quarters. Most of that season, I only got to play three quarters because we were winning. And my coach was just a great man and a great guy. He wasn't a big believer on running it up or getting, you know, kind of getting, I guess you'd call it crummy stats. He said, if you're going to get stats, it's because you're earning them and because we need your points. And so I was just excited to get to play all four quarters that night.
And it just and your guys' style of offense was up tempo. Is that from what I've understood? You guys just kind of ran.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, we you know, we played with what we called a 4-second shot clock offense. You know, our goal was to get the ball and to somehow have an effect on the defense every single time, whether our shots were going in or they weren't. And so we would push the ball up the court, and we were looking to score the ball in 4 seconds or less. And what would end up happening is sometimes defenses would get back and stop us, and that was fine, but they had to sprint back, and we put them out of their comfort zone. And typically what would end up happening is teams weren't mentally or physically conditioned and prepared to play that way, and so we'd start to stretch games out in the second half, either from physical, you know, being tired or just mentally breaking down. And that was really beneficial because we had a lot of possessions, and that also kept the game really flowing up and down. So if a team had a special concept or a special defensive scheme they were going to try to use to stop me, they really couldn't do it. We just imposed our will. So I was in a very good situation. I had a lot of freedom. I was able to take a lot of shots that other kids or coaches might not be allowed to take or might even get benched for taking. And so, again, I was just very, very fortunate and made the most of the awesome opportunity I had.
And listeners, you can actually go to YouTube. The game's actually on YouTube. It's pretty incredible. The video I watched was just the first quarter. But, yeah, it's some of those shots are just ridiculous. And so to go from that, where you're pushing a shot up every 4 seconds, to attempting to make 12,000 three-pointers in 24 hours. Now, this is another incredible video that's also on YouTube. You reached 5,000, and that was for a great organization to raise money for the local youth programs and charities, and the pain of those last few shots that you took. Describe that. I mean, that just looked absolutely horrific.
Well, you know, it's hard to explain. It was awful physically throughout the whole way. Those last few shots were great. Even the last hour, there was so much community support. There were so many kids out there really just, you know, wanting to see us follow through and make it happen. Obviously, we didn't break the Guinness Book of World Records. I'm 36 years old, so no excuses. It's just that was a shooting for 24 straight hours is a young man's deal. But we made it all the way through. We made 5,000. We raised money. We raised money for scholarships to an awesome school. We raised a lot of awareness about what they were doing, so the ripple effect has gone on. You know, it just goes to show you how strong the mind is. You know, physically, my body was gone after about 8 hours. You know, it was cramping very bad. I had to get a few IVs. I did some very, very serious damage to my wrist. And, you know, you just had to push through. And I was able to do that. If I was there shooting on my own, there's no way I would have been able to do it. But we had so much support. And then even those last couple hours, I actually shot pretty decent. You know, with the adrenaline got pumping. And, you know, just got my brain in a space where I could focus in on the task at hand, and we just knocked it out. It was obviously a lot of fun building up to it, a lot of fun after it. But definitely that day was one of the most challenging things, if not the most challenging thing I've ever done.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible, considering, you know, you've been in an NCAA championship game. You've played all over the world. I wanted to talk to you about your time spent in South America. What what's a professional basketball like down there? Are you like, because we, you know, we watch Narcos on Netflix and we think that there's just all this crime everywhere outside of America going on all the time. Like, is it shady, I guess, for lack of a better term? Like, or is it pretty well organized and you know, pretty, I guess, professional, I guess, for lack of,
Yeah, there's good organizations and bad organizations, just like anywhere. The good ones seem to win all the time. They have good people. They have good culture. You know, I was on a great team. It was a lot of fun. Played with some great players. I went down there at 21 years old, and I think my initial was, hey, I'm going down here. These guys can't play, and I was wrong. They really can play. There's players all over the world, and it's only getting better. And I guess it's a good metaphor for kids. You know, I work with kids who think they're really good in their small pond here, and I know because I've been through it. There's a kid in the next town, there's a kid in the next state, or lots of them that are really, really good, and they're not getting the exposure. And, you know, there's just great players everywhere. There's always good competition. Being down there definitely made me appreciate, you know, America. There's a lot of beautiful things down there. But in terms of just the organization and the civility and the just the overall safeness that you feel here in the States, it wasn't that way down there. And, you know, it's still a beautiful place, awesome, wonderful people. I had a great time, great exposure. I get to share that with the kids, you know, what that experience was. So it's real beneficial to people now. But it's definitely an eye-opening experience to go and not just be in another country, but to live there and compete, you know, in another continent. It was pretty... Definitely more stories to tell than just a short
Right. Well, we'll love to get some sometime. Well, so are you done playing professionally? Because, you know, you recently tried out in Sioux Falls, and from the reports I read, it seemed like you were very competitive. Coach Spolster was there in the article I read, you know, and sent some pictures to some of your, you know, your close friends, former teammates. How did that feel? Were you competitive, or were you step with everyone step by step, or
I mean, you know, as humbly as I can say it, I was the best player there. You know, I'm probably in better shape now than I was when I played. You know, the commitment to my fitness and just my overall lifestyle now. I mean, again, yeah. Everybody says that. If I could go back, you know, I wouldn't change anything. I wouldn't be the man I am today. I certainly wouldn't be having the impact I'm having on kids today if I wouldn't have gone through some of the things I went through. You know, but. You know, I'm just really happy where I'm at. You know, my game is really sharp right now. I don't have to play against, you know, 6'10" two guards, so that helps my efficiency a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, and I know Spolstra, you know, and we you know, kind of come up together. He's coached a couple of my players. He's won championships with a couple of guys that I've grown up with, and so I think he was a little surprised at the fitness I was in at this age. But yeah, I played really well. And you know, for one night, I'm sure I could still go out there and do all the things that I wanted to do. But that's not really NBA season or a college season is about. It's about the everyday grind, the everyday improvement, and, you know, the overall toll that takes on your body. So I couldn't play professional basketball anymore. But if I could play in a little exhibition-type deal where I could manage my minutes and defense wasn't important and all those cool things, I think I would still put on a pretty decent show.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because we got a few questions from our listeners. We got one from Sean McBride, who saw you with the Nike Elite team in 03 in Syracuse, and he compared you guys to the White Globetrotters. He just wanted to know about that experience and playing with the Nike Elite team.
That was a Sarge. That was awesome. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. That was my first experience really going out and playing on one of those teams. We did great. Usually you just get hammered. We had some really good players. I think we went 5-5 on that tour. Beat some really good teams. You know, played a great schedule. I think we played Clemson, Villanova, Penn State, Ohio State, Indiana. And, you know, you're going on the road and you're playing in all those buildings. So it was just a UConn. You know, we had an incredible trip, a lot of fun. We played well. I don't remember too much about the details of the trip. There's been a lot of basketball.
Yeah,
more important basketball than that. But, yeah, I'm probably talking about that Louisville game, too. Went down there against Coach Pitino. That was actually the day my daughter was born. I went 9-for-10 from three in the first half. And
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, 33 in the first half, and it was just an awesome, awesome, fun game. But, That's... Yeah, Coach Pitino. I've known him well, just obviously because he coached Donovan, and I got to know him during the recruiting process. And, yeah, it was fun to, yeah, fun to shoot it like that night.
And for the listeners at home, Mr. DePay here is regarded as Coach Donovan's first big recruit to Florida. You know, and so... I was going to ask you, was there ever any overlap with White Chocolate, Jason Williams? Did you guys ever go at it one-on-one?
Well, we played together a lot. Yeah, we played together a lot that summer. We played together a lot, many, many summers. Even last summer, we played against each other in the Orlando Pro-Am. And he's still in great shape, too. Really good player. Man, what a special talent. But he went pro, would have been my freshman year.
Yeah,
he transferred from Marshall with Coach. But, yeah, I was Coach's first recruit at Florida. I remember he got the job. I saw his press conference on TV, and the next day I was 16. I was a sophomore. I was down there in the gym, and you know, talked about starting a new culture at Florida, creating Florida basketball as we know it today, and had a very clear plan and a very clear vision for what we wanted to accomplish. And you know, we felt like he wanted to start with me, and that I could help some other players, very good players like Udavis Haslam, Brent Wright, Major Parker, Mike Miller, you know, helped them make a tough choice to come to Florida because it was a very unpopular one. I took a lot of criticism for that. Everybody thought I should go to Duke or a place like that. But I really liked the idea of being the very first program, very first player at Florida and being somebody that could, you know, be the all-time leading scorer in the history of the state in high school, be the very first player to create a culture at Florida. And, you know, that's why I'm so excited about what we're doing now, is to really leave a legacy of making a significant impact on the game of basketball, especially in this state, my home state. And, you know, just moving the game forward. Just moving the game forward, and we do that by helping the kids.
And I might add, too, why would you go to Duke? Jason Capel's going to Duke. You want to split time with him? No, you don't. That doesn't.
Yeah, I think he went to North Carolina. He was my year.
Oh, that's right.
His brother Jeff was at Duke.
That's right. Well, and that's can we see? Are we gonna see you on a sideline anywhere? Like maybe a Florida Gulf Coast or a Florida State, Florida University? Like, is coaching in college or the professional ranks in your future?
You know, I've had several offers at multiple levels, small college, big, you know, Division One, even at the NBA level, and I like what I'm doing. I've really found my purpose. You know, I'm a strong Christian, and this is what, you know, I've had some tough stuff happen, and as I look back on it, I'm genuinely thankful for that. It makes me appreciate what I'm able to do now. I'm making a huge impact on the world. You know, it might not be what everybody else thinks I'm supposed to do. You know, coach in the NBA, coach at college, be on TV, play pro,
right.
Go to this school, not this school. And, you know, it's tough when you're a kid because, you know, you trust adults to give you good guidance and advice. And so often they're giving that advice with really no real experience on the issue. They just go with the trend. They go with the flow. They do whatever's popular on TV, and they believe the media. I'm in a place right now where my connection with the Lord is really, really strong. I know I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and you know, just fulfilling my real potential, and that's you know, helping kids.
That's great. And aside from just dribbling a basketball and proper shooting mechanics, do you emphasize like the off the court stuff? Do you teach the kids you know, from your mistakes? Is that something you come across at all in the camps?
Yeah, every day. I mean, we don't really dwell on specifics. You know, it's really boils down to just making good choices, you know, treating people kindly. You know, don't make the same mistake twice, even if somebody else has made it. You don't have to make it yourself. Really teaching these kids to have good perspective, willing to be leaders. You know, we're looking to create captains every day. And I know that that's going to help them someday. They'll feel inspired like I do to give back and help in the future. You know, they'll be great parents, they'll be great bosses or employees or, you know, city servants or whatever the heck they're doing. They're going to be doing something someday,
right.
And I'd really like to think that, you know, maybe basketball can get them a scholarship for very, very few of them. But, you know, the things we're teaching is going to help them have a very positive and just very sad, you know.
Life lessons.
Life of significance.
Absolutely.
Making it. Hey Jackson, how are you, buddy?
Good to see you. I love it. I see. This is great. You got him coming in, like, right. And I'll let you get going. We have one more question, and that was from a teammate of mine, Nick Hoff, who plays on the Comedy Store basketball team with me. He wanted to know if you're ever in LA, would you mind playing for our Comedy Store team for a game?
Hold on a I'll play anytime, man. I love the game.
Oh.
I'm right here now, about to start playing basketball. I'm in the gym. Literally, I play basketball 7 days a week.
That's wonderful.
It's incredible. It really is incredible. I'm just so happy with the way my life is. I don't know any other way to explain it.
Yeah, no, you've done a great job.
So good. I'm doing what I love to do. I'm happy every single day. I wake up before the alarm if I even need to set one because I'm excited about the things I get to do. Anything that happens, I just see it as a positive, and it's just supposed to happen that way. So there's no complaining, there's no excuses, and you know, I look at some of the other situations that you know. Some adults are in, definitely some of these situations the kids are in, and it breaks my heart in some ways, but it just motivates me to keep on chugging along and just doing what we're doing.
Well, you could hear your happiness just then when as those kids came in and just dealing with them, and that, you know, that just came through in your voice right there. I'm glad you're doing so well, and I appreciate you taking up more time than probably needed here with us today. Listeners, go to teddydupay.com, TEDDYDUPAY.com if you're interested in the Southeast or Texas for one of the basketball camps. Teddy, appreciate your time, and we'd love to have you back on to get some more basketball stories. I didn't even get into the McDonald's All-American stuff, which I wanted to talk about. But
you guys just let me know, and it is kind of neat sometimes looking back. It's been a lot of good stuff has happened. I'm pretty fortunate.
Well, continue with the great success, and we will be in touch in the future.
Thanks, guys.
All right, be good. Go to teddydupay.com. That's DUPAY, teddydupay.com. Thanks for coming on, man. Look forward to having you back on, getting to some more specific questions. You know, I know, and Sean McBride, thank you for the great Nike Elite question, because I know I remember, Eric, when I was a kid, I would go to UMKC, was the local college basketball ticket you could get for free. But then they would have these like Reebok teams come through and Nike teams that always had like a second team All-American from like 2 or 3 years ago.
Sure.
Maybe players you definitely remembered. In my experience, I remember Javon Crudup, who was a Kansas City legend, went to Missouri, drafted by the Pistons, and then I believe cut before ever playing an NBA game for stealing a car stereo or something ridiculous like that. But yeah, so that was, we'll definitely have you back on, Teddy, and ask you about some of that stuff and get into the detail.
Thank you so much. And I don't usually like those Florida. I mean, you know, now that I guess you
I
know
like
him
nothing
and,
about Florida except
right,
for Teddy.
Right, and those Billy Donovan. Well, they were great teams. He's a great coach. Man, they were very frustrating.
I was just kind of surprised that he ended up going to Oklahoma City, especially after signing and then reneging with the Orlando a few years back.
Right.
You know, coming off that Heat, those back-to-back championships. But, you know, things cooled down.
I don't know, but for a while, a couple years ago, there was a little bit of a trending. It was fashionable for big college coaches, like, say, Chip Kelly from Oregon. Like, remember, he was going to go to the Browns, and then he backed out. You know, it was like, we're going to, you know, or You know, and now and or now we have that great George Karl at the Sacramento Kings. Like, yeah, basically we wanted to fire him.
Then now they're like, no, we're not. We're going to. That's a whole. If I'm George Karl, I just walk away and say, you don't want me? Fine, whatever.
No, that's what they want him to do, and so that's why he won't do it. He's like, I know you want me to walk away. I'm not walking away. I'm George Karl.
He's like, Boogie Cousins is a moron. Okay, yeah, he's really good at basketball, but the guy is an idiot.
I think George Karl
He's like, I beat cancer. Leave me alone.
He's going to win the PJ Carlissimo most likely to get strangled by one of his players or assaulted by one of his players award. So I think Karl is the new Carlissimo.
Why can't Vlad? I know he's the GM, but I just want to see Vladi on coaching. You know, there's something about a big Serbian guy walking around on the sidelines in a tailored suit that's like 8 feet tall. That's just. I want to see
looks
that.
Like, do you ever think he looks like Yakov Smirnov?
I just do every time I see him.
Yeah,
think
so
that.
Huge. What a country.
Have you listened to any of Ingram's Comedy Store podcast yet?
I haven't.
I have not either, but I know recently he had a sit down with Yakov Smirnov.
Which is great.
Which I know for being a Midwest guy, Branson, Missouri, his home for years, where the Yakov Smirnov Theater is located. Deep in the heart of the Ozark Mountains.
Deep in the heart of Ozarks.
But listeners, I'm actually going to, now that I mentioned, I'm actually going to go download that and listen to that afterwards. But
What's the name of that podcast?
I think it's just the Comedy Store podcast with Rick Ingram, I believe.
That's great.
And Rick's an old friend of ours, great, great sports fan, busy as hell, very cynical. Maybe hopefully have him on someday. Yeah. To talk. But yeah.
Thank God, we've never had him on.
Well, he's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, no. Like, you want to, no.
98 episodes.
He's like,
never had him on.
Nah. Well, eventually. We'll get him on. I would guess it would be to talk Kansas basketball. He and I have a history. We drove up to the Bay Area 2007 and watched UCLA defeat Kansas to go to the Final Four, which was the first year they went in those back-to-back Final Four years, which, of course, they did nothing with. But they had Kevin Love and Westbrook, Luke Richard and Mbamute, Aflalo, Aaron Aflalo, Drew. They had like seven NBA players on their team. It was a pretty pretty stacked lineup. And we're almost
all right,
it's almost
the
March.
Super Bowl's over. The interview's over.
It's almost
over.
March, exactly.
What do we have to look
I
forward to?
I think Teddy DuPay is a perfect segue right into college basketball.
That is a good one.
March is here, ladies and gentlemen. Start
the madness. The
start
madness
watching.
Is about a month away.
I mean, not... Just put in just a Big East games on. You don't watch Big East. You know what? Watch Xavier because they're going to upset somebody in the tournament. Yeah, they lost last night to Creighton. Not important. But just start watching, you know, and Buddy Hield at Oklahoma.
And also remember, guys,
amazing play. Watch.
Dick Vitale, Dickie V, he's not going to be alive forever. National treasure. Watch him while you have him.
That's a good, you know, if you can stand to watch him, you know, just put it on mute and stare at him, you know, if you need to do that. If you can't.
It's awesome, baby.
Well, you know, so definitely March Madness, which I'm a college basketball, you know, fan for sure. And but for me, it's pitchers and catchers, which show up in Arizona and in Florida next week. And then shortly thereafter.
Do you guys, the Royals go where? Arizona or
Arizona,
Florida?
Arizona.
That's so
I'm
weird.
Not sure. I think they used to go to Florida, and then I think it was just in the last.
Well, that's where your academy was. The famous
yes.
Royals Academy was
yep.
in Florida.
Which produced Frank White.
I've never been to I've never been to any spring training, but of course,
that's
as a
surprising
Red Sox
to
fan,
me to hear you say that. That's surprising. I mean, you've been to Friday Night Lights football games.
Yes,
Western.
I have been to. I have actually been to. I've been to an Odessa. I've been to an Odessa Permian. I went to a pep rally. I saw a practice. I've been inside the locker room. I mean, I might have. Basically, I think I stalked that high school team.
But you've yet to attend a spring training game.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what you're missing out on. The worst seat in the house is the $200 seat at the Major League Stadium. You get to see your top prospects, the guys that are either going to crack the lineup if they're good enough midseason,
right?
The September call-ups, but then the future stars. Like whenever I went, I believe it was 2011. Man, I just wanted to look at. You heard about Hosmer. I'm like, I want to see this guy with my own eyes and make sure that he's a real person. You know, and I did. So, and that was in Arizona. That was a great trip. But my first spring training was in 1999. Actually, it was a Red Sox Reds in Sarasota, Florida.
Wow.
A same game, Jerry Springer, former Cincinnati mayor, was also attending.
That's a weird one.
Yeah, it was weird. He just strolled right by, and Eli was like, is that Jerry Springer? We were like, and then like clockwork, Jerry, 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 from about 500 people. Like
when I was
there.
When I was a,
but you gotta go, you gotta go. It's right there. It's a 5-hour drive down the 10.
I have to say this. I'll say this about Jerry Springer. You know, especially in the 90s, I was working on the old Ellen TV show when I was a writer's assistant, and we made one of those Jerry Springer jokes that you made, especially at the time. It's like, you know, it's 96, 97, and everyone made, like, you know, a Jerry Springer reference as a punchline. You know, and I got to tell you, he sent us a basket of desserts. He sent us this very nice, like, a muffin and cheesecake basket, which is, like, just showing that he's a good, hey, you mentioned my name. Thanks for mentioning my name. And he's like a good sport because we're making fun of him as everyone made fun of him and belittled him in the 90s. But he was like a good sport about it. And he's like, hey, my brand's getting out there. I'm Jerry Springer. And here's a fruit basket.
That's a good move.
Great move, Jerry Springer.
Listeners, take that move home with you. Take the Springer move.
Don't be afraid.
Send a barbecue sauce to somebody randomly for a birthday or
whatever.
Whatever,
you know, send some cupcakes or some cookies or whatever the edible arrangements.
The fact is, 17 years later, Eric still remembers that.
Oh, I totally remember that.
And for you youngsters, you don't understand. You know Jerry Springer, but you don't really know Jerry Springer. I remember as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, getting my oil changed.
Paid for a prostitute with a check.
In my 1987 Honda Accord 5-speed with 170,000 miles on it, which I got up to 125 miles an hour on the highway one time, and I think that's why it wouldn't go into fifth gear after that. Great car. Love the car. But I just remember it's like 2 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, and I'm watching Springer at the Jiffy Lube, and there's just, you know, the miscellaneous Jiffy Lube crowd. Old, young, black, white, and really that's about it because it was in
Jiffy Lube crowd.
It was Kansas and in the late 90s. But everyone's laughing at this, you know, and then it's the show stops, and then another one starts up. Well, there was a two-hour block of Jerry Springer every afternoon for like 3 or 4 or 5 straight years. So you're talking 97 through like 2000, 2001. Those are the prime Springer years.
Springer years.
But he appealed to everybody. I think that's why everyone had something. Everyone could relate to a Springer because he would always defend the person that was getting beat up on verbally or whatever. He'd always have their – he would go stand over by them to, like, comfort them.
You know, and then he had the great, like, what did we learn moment at the end of every show, which was stupid. We didn't need to learn anything.
It's like what we learned is you know how to produce a goddamn awesome television show.
Yeah, I always sort of felt like he really brought the state fair to TV. That's what I always felt. I always sort of wanted to see, like, I always thought he should go on the road and just do this at state fairs. That's what I always thought.
Like, at some point during a Jerry Springer show, you expect to hear a ding in the microwave, and then you go to the microwave, and there'll be two warm corn dogs in there for you to go enjoy, just to heighten that Jerry Springer experience. But, yeah, so all that being said, and you're not going to get that Jerry Springer experience unless you're in Sarasota at a spring training game.
Yeah, boom.
So listeners, go to a game. Like, they price the flights down a little bit to entice the travel. Especially what I love about the Phoenix area, within a 40-mile radius, I believe it's 10 or 12 teams are all playing. You get back-to-back, they have a couple complexes where it'll be like the Indians and like the Rangers share alternating fields, or their complexes are across the street from each other, but they're all kind of spread out. But, you know, the furthest distance apart, you know, is like a 45-minute, maybe hour drive from the east side of Phoenix, like Mesa, Tempe area, over to the west side, Peoria, Goodyear, and that kind of. But tickets are $15-17. The players are walking around with carrying their own bags. The sun's beating down for all those in cold weather states. You're going to get your first sunburn of the year in March. You get to go home and just brag about a sunburn because you know that's going to be all the rage at the office. People will be like, dude, where'd you get your sunburn? Spring training.
And that's like, right. Wow. Get your frequent flyer miles together, people. Get to Florida. Get to Arizona.
Am I addicted?
Because spring is coming.
I'm very excited because I've planned out. I've got I've got eight Royals games.
Really?
Already. Or I'm sorry, seven Royals games. I've already got, I'm going to be able to see before the end of April. Before the end of April, ladies and gentlemen.
Guys, by the way, so Sheezer, this is behind the show stuff. Sheezer was over here last week. We're recording in Los Angeles at my secret location on Sunset Boulevard. And it just so happens that I have the 2004, I have a throw blanket for the Red Sox 2004
it's
World
a
Series.
Sweet blanket. It's
and Sheezer sees it, and you know Sheezer has, you know Sheezer just had the, you know, you had your World Series Christmas with I have my World Series Royals cap, and I have my divisional series cap, and I have, you know, but he sees it, and he's like, I need to get me one of those. It's like, yeah, you need a Royals World Championship throw blanket.
I think my exact words were, "Yep, that seals it. Definitely got to get a
Royals." I was like, of all the things, you're like, "Oh shit, I don't have my throw blanket."
I put myself in my own house 12 years from now, walking in and just seeing that blanket. Like it made seeing that big 04 champions and the old font from the early aughts, and
yeah.
You know, I just put a smile on my face. I'm going to need that on my couch at some point.
Right.
Maybe even two of them in case my future kids throw up or shit on it or something.
Oh, right.
So I got two spring training games. I'm going to go to Arizona. Speaking of spring training, I believe it's the 25th and 26th. Then, as luck would have it, Royals Angels, first week, not opening weekend, but
I get you.
Following. They're doing a 3-game in Anaheim. It's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday break. Or I'm sorry, yeah, break, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Seattle. So what I'm going to go Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Anaheim, booking the flights. Yeah. They're 170 round trip. Going to do like a late birthday thing with the offensive coordinator up in Seattle. She used to live up there. She's got her favorite omelet spot. So we're going to go up to Seattle, visit, go to the mountains. Got my old buddy. He lives out in a cabin, his family, way out in the sticks.
Buddy lives in a cabin?
Yep. It's fantastic. In the middle of nowhere, two hours northeast of Seattle.
Well, I mean, isn't every cabin in the middle of nowhere? No one's like, hey, that cabin's in a high traffic area.
Yeah. You ever been to Lake Arrowhead or Big Bear?
This is a, well, you know.
That is, there are cabins. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's in the middle of nowhere, but the cabins.
But that's in the middle of nowhere.
But they're all right next to each other.
Lake Arrowhead's in the middle of nowhere.
You couldn't find his. Like, directions are, like, right at the third red mailbox.
And yes,
You get to the bridge, just count down from 30, and you'll see some bushes.
The third stump from the door is actually a hollowed-out fake stump, and that's where the keys are.
I've been there a few times. It's wonderful.
If you go to the old, there's an old pickup truck in the back. And
nope,
if you go in
we
the
moved
gov,
that one.
And you go in the gov compartment, that's where the keys are for the...
Dude, I was looking into, like, there's a one-bedroom, like, hunting lodge cabin on the river, like a quarter mile down from his cabin, that's on for sale for like 80 grand. I'm like, dude, the mortgage payments are like $90 a month. Why don't I just buy that cabin? I'm like, dude, could you look out for it for
this
me?
This is like cheaper than leasing a car.
it was. I was like, what's the $90?
Yeah, but then you have to live in the woods.
So then from there, then we'll drive in and catch the Saturday Seattle. And then there's a 1 o'clock game Sunday. Then we're going to fly out Sunday night, be walk in.
Wait, so you're in Seattle?
Yeah.
In April? In March? In April. In April.
Into April, yeah.
In April. Cold. It's going to be cold, bro.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready for it, bro.
It's going to be cold, bro.
So I'll have all my Royals scarves and everything ready to go. And hopefully when I board that plane, there'll be some Royals fans flying up to travel. Because, guys, Royals fans listening, it's going to be like last year. Go back if you have the MLB, you know, online package like I do. You go back and watch the old Royals games on the road. All you hear, let's go Royals. As soon as the game's over, which means we have a lead in the sixth inning, and then the game's done. And then
I like that you're rewatching games just like middle of the season games. I'll go back on the MLB package. It's like, that's how drunk you are on this World Series championship.
I've watched the game four of the Houston inning seven and on probably five or six times. And I like that because I cue it up and I let Houston come, like, get their lead. I let Correa hit the home run.
Oh yeah, you mean kept hitting them.
And I watched them celebrate like they're going to.
They're
going to the goddamn ALCS, and they're all happy. And then I just watch.
That was amazing.
Watch Alex Rios come up, bloop one. Watch Escobar bloop one. I watch Zobrist go up the middle. Then I watch Morales double up the middle. Then it's air. And then it's like, oh, then it just, then tears are flowing. Happiness. Not now. The live version.
I get what you're saying. I don't well up anymore. You know, I ended up rewatching. Every time I watch, every time it comes up, when you end up watching the, you know, the Patriots, the last Super Bowl against the Seahawks, there's this creepy, you know, in that crazy curse catch and everything. It's like, God, Malcolm Butler's really going to intercept this ball? Like, you
still question it.
It's still a little too close to call. Like, it's still like, really?
That unbelievable, really. I mean, it is. I mean, that's got to be your favorite Super Bowl. I mean, as a fan, to go from like, damn it, man, we just lost. What? What just happened?
I don't know if it's my favorite Super Bowl. I mean, I go with my Lord and Savior Tom Brady. That my favorite Super Bowl is my next Super Bowl. I go with again Lord and Savior Tom Brady on that one. But I gotta be honest with you, the 2002 Super Bowl, you know, when we won
the Rams.
That's the one we beat the Rams, right? You know, it's the 2001, 2002 season. The Super Bowl happens.
The game you referenced earlier, where Warner gets knocked.
That's where Warner gives up the will to live, and U2 played Beautiful Day at halftime. And when U2 played at halftime, I actually knew the Patriots were going to win. That's when I knew. It was a beautiful day. Every time I hear the song Beautiful Day, I'm sort of brought back to that moment. I mean, it was a grand moment. You know, my buddy Kevin O'Donnell and I were watching down at Sonny McLean's in Santa Monica, a great Boston bar. You know, my buddy, like, saw some girl's tits in the bathroom just because we had just won the Super Bowl. It was like, it was also the point where, you know, and if I could put this, there are more important wins, like the Red Sox winning in a way, but the Patriots winning, that was when I knew we could win. I could actually win. Like, you hadn't won anything since the Celtics. The New England hadn't won anything since 86 with the Celtics, and now, holy shit, we could really win now. And that's what it took to be a champion, or you knew that good times were coming. And wow, and after, because it's like since then, it's been 4 Super Bowls, 6 appearances. Brady's been in 10 AFC championships.
As a franchise, it was just 85.
No,
in the
80.
Run,
right? It's like the Pittsburgh Steelers, Dallas Cowboys, New England Patriots, and now Denver Broncos have all appeared in 8.
Okay,
and that's
okay.
The most. The eight is the most.
The Patriots did 2 in the 80s. Was like an 82 and 85.
No, it's 80. It's 86 because it's the 80. They lose to the 85 Bears in 86.
Right.
It's like because 86 is this amazing year in Boston sports, which starts with the Patriots going to the Super Bowl but getting killed. Then it's like the last of the Bird, McHale, Parrish. They have Bill Walton as their backup center, which is like a great. You know, you have Jerry Seasting and Danny Ainge and Johnson. And that 86 team, the 86 team is, you know, aside from the 72 win Chicago Bulls, is maybe one of the greatest teams ever put, you know. And it's one that many Boston fans feel like the Lakers punked out and lost to the Rockets because you didn't want this beating. You didn't want what we had. We were gonna give you a beatdown, Lakers. This was not gonna be. This rivalry.
Like
you
in that Rockets series, they said, "Well, we could try a little harder and win, but then we're gonna have to play the Celtics,
and you're gonna lose." It's like, you know, because the Celtics win 3 times in the 80s, but they beat the Houston Rockets twice, and the Lakers only once.
Now, are these like young Olajuwon, Drexler, or no? I'm sorry,
Olajuwon. This is Ralph Sampson and Olajuwon. This is the Twin Towers teams, is what we're talking about. Because Olajuwon actually takes a swing at Jerry Seasting. Like, they get in a fight and, like, punches are thrown. And then, so the Celtics win. And then 86 is the Red Sox-Mets. And I think we kind of know what happened there with Buckner. It was a crazy – I mean, so it's like it was a very successful yet terrible year. It's sort of like – it was like in 1 year, Boston basically did – they lived like almost like the Buffalo Bills. It was good but bad. It was, you know, like the Buffalo Bills 4 years in a row and losing, losing, losing. You know, it's great to go to 4 Super Bowls, but not if you're going to lose all of them.
Which it was a great point last week you brought up that does completely. And Brant Tobler, by the way, congratulations. And I mean, we'll have to have you back on now that you are a Super Bowl champion. Because if you remember,
we're not having any Denver Bronco fans on this.
He was worried that he was like this curse. You know, he's like, I can't go to the game, and I've reversed all these curses that I think might be happening. And
I get that. I get that. I had to watch. It was like the one thing I can say nice about the Super Bowl is, you know, I didn't have to care. I mean, I didn't. I was kind of rooting. You know, I was rooting. I'm rooting for an HGH investigation. I'm rooting for an earthquake to swallow Peyton up. But I, you know, I was able to go to a party and be very social. In fact, so social that I got to see another friend actually get too drunk and almost make a huge scene, which was funny in itself.
Nice. I'd love to hear about that after we get done recording.
Some of things aren't fit for air.
That's not a friend that's...
Oh, it's a good friend of ours. Okay. Oh, it's a real good friend.
Not one that's going to be down in La Jolla later.
Nope.
Okay, good.
Not
okay.
One of our friends.
Which, by the way, listeners, if you are in Southern California, in and around San Diego, La Jolla Comedy Store, third week of June. Rick Ingram, Brian Moses, who's a past guest and creator of the Roast Battle, and myself will be performing all weekend at the Comedy Store. So
that's great.
Just call it up, dial it in, just show up. In fact, just
Moses and Sheezer and Ingram.
I know that's going to be the best. I mean, I can't imagine not having a
God.
Great
I should
time.
Just come down in there, and I gotta jump on this show.
Padres out of town. I already looked. I'm like, man, maybe there's a day game or something. Just an excuse to go down there and drink six beers and just ride the train back up to Pacific Beach.
See if the Chargers are still in town.
And John is go to John is here, JonIsHere.com. They'll have all some more tour dates. Always has links to the episodes. And, you know, good stuff like that. I'm going to start blogging a little bit more. I put up not even an article, but I've been having problems worrying about baseball, thinking about like just antsiness. It's like that Christmas morning feeling.
I don't even know why. You've won a World Series. Will you relax? I don't even understand this. This is a crazy.
It's because you get to come home, and there's a stat you can look at. And
I'm telling you,
it's
like you've just had a. It's like you have postpartum depression. You're like a mother with postpartum depression. It's very strange. You just can't seem to relax and enjoy life now that you've actually won a World Series. It's like you're actually sort of more edgy than you were when you lost to the Giants with that guy on third base.
No, I would agree with that because after that loss in 14, that was still a win.
Right.
That was still a win. And like we mentioned a few episodes back, I'm glad it went down like that because I can't win in 14 and lose in 15.
By the way, listeners, Sheezer is so competitive. When he came in today to record, he's like, "Hey, did you hear about? Have you seen these pictures of the Denver Broncos parade? They're saying there's a million. We were talking about Kansas City. Hey, have you seen the pictures? There is no way they have more people in Denver. Look at the Royals photos of their parade.
I just heard rumors.
I love that you're on the.
They're quoting a million. I'm like, is that really a million? Or are you just saying a million because you heard 800,000 a couple months ago come out of Kansas City? I think that's what that is.
By the way, they're in Colorado. They're all high on the dope, on the marijuana.
I guarantee you that's the single most stinkiest victory parade of all time.
Or the best.
I mean,
smells the best.
Good smell, but mainly a lot of that bad BO, that musty stuff that you can't really match.
I would bet there's the most patchouli at a parade.
God, and how many people stood on corners selling stupid tie-dye World Champions T-shirts?
Good.
The freaking Bronco or some sort of like Tebow praying to Peyton Manning shirt.
You know, it's interesting, too. It's like, you know, the Bronco logo isn't like you don't really see Bronco gear worn around on an everyday kind of basis. You don't. But now I'm definitely watching some bandwagon riders or some people that are they're out of the closet.
Are you talking about out here?
Oh,
Bronco stuff, it just looks kind of – the color scheme's all right. But
orange
yeah,
is a tough color for lots of people to wear.
The Mustang head, yeah.
The
no
Bronco.
Good. The majority of the Broncos – yeah, the Bronco, yeah. The majority of Denver Broncos stuff I see people wear is just the generic hoodie with the Broncos on it. It never says Denver. It always just says Broncos in orange. That's it. Just give me a navy blue hoodie and put Broncos on there in orange, and that's all I need. And I don't blame you, Bronco fan, because that's the only respectable looking shirt that you guys offer. Otherwise, you got this stupid Bronco. Actually, it's not even like blowing out steam out of its nose, but I'm sure that's coming on the next.
It was in the old one, in the old Denver one. I feel like there was.
Yeah, that might be like a minor league logo, or is it Bull Durham? Is that their logo in Durham, North Carolina? All right, any plugs? Let's wrap this thing up. The ship is coming, or the plane is landing. The
plane is Tray coming tables for a landing. Up,
seatbelts on. Guys, thank you for listening. We had over 4,500 people listen to the show last month, which is awesome. And you're one of those people. So thank you. Thank you for telling your friends. Thank you for listening week to week.
Like the old logo did. The old Denver logo did include snort. Yeah, snort coming.
Right. It had the weird like, but it looks more like a laser beam, right? It's like, is there that much?
Not the, technically the second logo, because they had a crazy like originally they when they started like in 1960 they had like some crazy almost like Picasso crazy horse thing.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like coming out like a. I didn't realize horse had that much projectile like. Snot.
Yeah, it's like yeah, it's a projectile snot. Yeah, it's a like, snot rocket. That's the word.
Don't mess with these Broncos. It will snot.
Or like how an Italian man blows his nose straight on the street. You know what I mean? Like wham, and it just.
I tried that a couple times, like the snot rocket, and I'm just like, no.
Oh yeah, I can.
I cannot. I'm like, there's too much beard to get caught up in. You know what I mean? Like, we have a lot to lose. Like, this could be stuck on our face and not really just wipe it off. Yeah, you know, wipe it in. But, guys, thanks again for listening. And as you've noticed, it's been every Tuesday, Wednesday. We're going midweek. It's been working the past 5 episodes. It fits into our schedule, so hopefully it's fitting into yours. Show up, go ups.
Show up, go ups. Sunday nights at the world famous comedy store in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles area. You can follow me on Oh That Marino. Guys, check out the roast battle on Periscope while you get a chance. That's Tuesday nights at 11 Pacific Standard Time. I will be opening for Leslie Jones. Leslie Jones will be playing Colorado State in March. In April, I want to say we are in Atlantic City.
Give it to me. Give me some more.
And July, we are in Vegas. Vegas, baby. Oh, Vegas. Man. I want to say July 29th. And then we're gonna be doing more shows in Colorado. I think we're there for a whole week.
Okay.
We're doing Colorado State, which is where Leslie played basketball, as we've talked about previously on the show. And then we're doing 3 or 4 more shows around that show. But dates coming. More dates coming, more information coming.
Yeah, I like it. Let's get you to some minor league baseball games.
Right, bro? All right. With that said, Sheezer, he's John Sheezer. I'm Eric Marino. I'm going to blow a whistle and say stay obsessed. Sheezer, what do you have to say?
Hey, I'm just going to let you go ahead and work your magic.
Stay obsessed, everybody.
Always go. I'll be fine once I get it. I'll be good. Oh my God, why did I drink?
so much. This smoke so much.